intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
I loved your talk, Fred, in Denver at the Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship last meeting. It was really fun.
Oh, thanks, Bob.
Yeah, I loved it. In fact, I took notes like crazy.
Okay, yeah. The theme was fake news.
Fake news, yep. Which I stole your theme for the March for Life, Colorado's annual March for Life. And I was the speaker for 2017, and the theme was fake news.
Fake news, okay.
So I did steal your theme. But Fred, in fact, Lord willing, we'll put that on YouTube soon, either us or Colorado Right to Life. But for tonight's show, I'd love for us to discuss some of the comments you made. I jotted down a list as you were talking, so you've looked at my list. We'll go through those.
Okay, sounds like a plan.
All right, but we have some programming notes. These are fun things.
Yeah, the upcoming RSR list show. And what it is lists for the evidence for the Exodus.
Whoa.
I can't wait to do that one. That is going to be so cool.
Yeah, I love the RSR list shows. They're my favorite.
Yeah.
And this one, people think, well, there's a lot of evidence for creation and for the global flood and for the resurrection.
Mm-hmm.
But the Exodus was such a significant event in the history of the world, really. Where's all the evidence for it? So we're going to show the mountain of evidence.
Yeah. So this will be neat. It's a kind of a different kind of list show, but I can't wait to do it.
Yeah. And people could get a sneak peek because we're putting the draft of the list of evidences on the website right now. There's some of it.
Yeah.
At rsr.org/Exodus.
Yep. And you know what, Bob? It's on the new website. Your website designer did a great job.
Oh,
it was just released. I encourage people, go check out the new website. It's really, really good.
We have a listener, in fact, quite a few listeners in Vancouver, British Columbia. And one of them, his name is Brad. He owns a graphic design company. And they are good, Fred. In fact, they did our Big Bang video. Many of the slides and the cover of the case and the DVD Blu-ray label.
Yeah, I'm looking at the case right now, and it is really cool.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
Yep.
And so Brad did the design. And our web guy lives in Ohio. He did the implementation. And so we still have a few kinks to get out of the system. That's not surprising. But it's working, and I agree with you.
But just by listening up in Vancouver, he liked the show, contacted us.
Yes.
He's done a lot of great graphic
work. Thank
you, Brad. Yeah, absolutely.
And thank you, Nathan, in Ohio.
Great work. Yep.
So also we have the telethon, our annual February telethon. The vital goal is $30,000.
Yeah, and we need that to stay on the air.
We do have a megachurch behind us, right?
Yeah.
Funding the whole. We also have a foundation funding.
Yeah, I'm sure you do, Bob.
Right. So we depend on the Lord and our listeners. So this $30,000 goal, for those who give $100 or more, or subscribe to one of our many monthly subscriptions, mm-hmm. we have two thank you gifts. We want to send both.
Yeah, the first is the Evidence Against the Big Bang DVD.
Yes.
This is incredible. It's very well produced.
Oh, it's
awesome. You normally sell this for what, Bob, on the store?
$35.
Yeah, $35.
It's three parts. It's full length. And
cool. It's really cool. There's the graphics in here.
Yes.
The animations. It's really well done.
A former NASA team lead who worked on the Cassini-Saturn mission for years. He has given us the most ringing endorsement of this video. I think you saw his testimony. I was thrilled to read it. But I'd like to ask David Coppedge if we could use that publicly.
Yeah.
So hopefully we can. I guess I just did.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll be okay with it.
And also, not only the Big Bang video, but Dr. Walt Brown's book, In the Beginning.
Our favorite creation book.
Yes.
Both yours and mine.
Yes. Full color, hardcover. I mean, you could put this on your coffee table.
Yeah, it's a really great book. It's
beautiful
huge.
Science
it's a very,
book.
Very nice book.
Yeah. So both of the, and we sell that for $35.
Yeah.
So it's
so
an incredible
$70
offer.
Worth of material.
Yes.
Because this is really top notch.
Yes. And if you give $100 or more to the telethon, or if you subscribe to our monthly Bible studies, our topical videos, our sermons, whatever you'd like. You could see we have like 8 different subscriptions and you could choose from.
Yeah, the monthly Bible studies are awesome.
Oh,
very good.
Thank you. So aren't they fun?
They are.
Verse by verse through the whole Bible. Yeah. Talk about getting a Bible education. It's like you went to seminary. It's
really get the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. That is so good.
Oh,
that's fantastic.
I love that.
I still didn't believe it when I was listening to it. I'm like, that's not in Genesis. Well, it wasn't. It was in a different book of the Bible.
Yeah, but what? So fun, right? The tree of the knowledge of good and evil, the tree. That telethon, you can reach it by calling us at 1-800-8-NYARDS, 1-800-836-9278, or going to the website, rsr.org, and clicking on the store to donate or subscribe or to purchase something. Okay, so, Fred, we normally don't take calls, but a new listener, brand new, just happened to call in right before showtime, and he's from Wyoming. So what a thrill. Daniel from Douglas, Wyoming, welcome to Real Science Radio.
Thank you very much, Bob. It's good to be here.
Yeah, and Fred Williams is here. So,
Are you sure that's not Douglas from Daniel, Wyoming?
No, it's...
Yeah, two good names there.
Yeah.
So Douglas is, what, between Casper and Cheyenne?
Well, my geography knowledge is not as complete as either my biblical or creation knowledge, but I think I can estimate, yes, that is that's correct. It's between Cheyenne and Casper.
All right. Sounds great. So what brought you to call today, Daniel?
Well, I was looking at a Brian Nichol video, which is just fascinating. He's basically illustrating a chapter of Walt Brown's book in the beginning. You were mentioning it a moment ago. It's called The Origin of Earth's Radioactivity.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Nichol, you would just never guess that somebody who is a scientist and an engineer and somebody who is so incredibly monotone could produce such an utterly fascinating
video.
And I mean, right from the very first moment that he is introducing himself, I'm hooked on this. And
Daniel, Brian is a mechanical engineer working in the aerospace industry. When you talk about rocket scientists, he's a rocket scientist for real.
Yeah, I really enjoyed and was greatly informed by his video, which he did on Walt Brown's chapter, The Origin of Earth's Radioactivity. The secular scientists don't really have an explanation for how the heavy elements, heavier than iron, were formed. Their stock explanation about it being formed in stars is scientifically untenable.
Well, they have retracted the claim that they were formed in supernova. And that's in this video, the Big Bang video, how they retracted that entire claim. Now they're making a new claim, but that's expected.
I went from that Brian Nichol video to a series of interviews that you did with Walt Brown on RSR.
Yes.
And I was just really enthralled. I just have been listening to them one after the other.
Oh, I'm thrilled to hear that. And I think you mentioned Jane Albright.
Yes. Well, what happened is Peggy Brown sent me the CD set that you have.
Oh, yeah. Our series with Jane Albright on comparing the different flood models, the vapor canopy theory, catastrophic plate tectonics, and Walt Brown's Fountains of the Great Deep, the hydroplate theory.
I just love the way you interview people, how you do keep it real, just as in your slogan. You want people to know the truth, but you speak the truth in love. That's my opinion.
Wow.
You want to expose the controversy, not like a secular reporter that's just looking for glory and is just wanting to sensationalize the whole issue to draw attention to himself, but you really want to bring the truth of the issue out into the open where people can examine it. And the way you do that, I think, it's very fair to both sides, even though RSR has made it clear, you know, that you support Walt Brown's hydroplate theory. Why? Because you think that that is a good model.
Right. Scientifically, biblically. But, hey, Daniel, so now, since we're being truthful, how much did we pay you to say all this?
I've just happened to call Bob Enyard. I wanted to express my gratitude and just my interest in the show. And
thank you. Could we close with, I'll put you on the spot. Can you think of one observation in the shows you've heard so far that, you know, struck you as worth pondering?
I would say one of the many things, you were talking about asteroids and comets, and these are things that Walt Brown has an explanation for, a very good explanation for, of how they came to be. And you just made me realize for the first time that if these things were hurtling about space at the time of creation, that they would not have been good, and God could certainly not have called his creation very good with these dangerous things spinning about the cosmos and possibly crashing into Earth at a certain
point. Yeah, they're like speeding bullets through the solar system, like bombs ready to drop on a country.
Yep. Great point. Yep.
So, all right, Daniel, what an honor to hear from you. It's so fun to think of you up there in Wyoming tuning in. We just hope God blesses you in your life.
Thanks a lot, Daniel. Great radio voice.
Yeah, he does.
Thanks very much.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
It sounds fun. You're the only caller in the past 2 years. So congratulations. Okay. Thank you. That was Daniel from Wyoming. Now, Fred, we're never going to get to the highlights of your talk because there are two recent science news reports that we should cover because they both have to do with dinosaur soft tissue.
Yeah, dinosaur soft tissue.
Yes.
You know, one is from Nature Communications.
Yes, that's right. It's about a rib of a plant-eating dinosaur. And the other is about a Brachylophosaurus.
Brachylophosaurus.
And back when we started
this
show.
Say that 10 times real fast.
Back when we started Real Science Radio, I would not have been able to pronounce Brachylophosaurus.
Brachylophosaurus.
But let's see if we could kill a thesaurus tonight and maybe barbecue it.
Yeah.
Because there's more soft tissue than hanging in a butcher shop. No, not really.
Yeah.
You got to use a microscope to see the soft tissue.
Yeah, you
but
do.
There are tons of it.
There's tons of it. Now, there's one from Nature Communications. This is an article. It's reporting on the peer-reviewed material.
So from phys.org.
Yeah, from phys.org. So it talks about the rib of a long-necked plant-eating dinosaur that lived 195 million years ago, and it has yielded what may be the oldest remains of soft tissue ever discovered. Is that true?
Oh, ever discovered.
Ever discovered. So, the oldest.
So first of all, it's alleged that it's 195 million
years old. Yeah, alleged, of course.
Because soft tissue, blood vessels, red blood cells, proteins, DNA fragments, they don't last 100 million years. 200 million years and on
oh,
up.
No.
They don't last that.
They don't last. They'd be lucky to last, what, 10,000 years, let alone that period of time.
Of course. So, Fred, the fact that they write here that these may be the oldest remains ever of soft tissue discovered, obviously they don't read their own peer-reviewed papers.
They don't. They're not visiting our website.
Well, some of them are, okay. But not these guys. So they should come to Real Science Radio, rsr.org/soft, and down at the bottom of that, and that shows all the dinosaur soft tissue discoveries.
Yep.
There's tons of them. Down at the bottom of that page, there's supplemental material. You click on there and you get a spreadsheet of all the soft tissue finds, not only dinosaurs, and from, allegedly, hundreds of millions of years before the dinosaurs. For example, Fred, they're forgetting about the peer-reviewed journal papers that document, allegedly, 200 million-year-old collagen and blood vessels.
Yep.
Then there's another study, 247 million-year-old Jurassic blood vessels. And maybe they're not counting this because there's not enough biological material to describe it as tissue, but it's just endogenous biological material. 350 million years ago, and allegedly 530 million years ago, and then from 1.8 billion years ago, they say they've uncovered original biological material. The stuff must be eternal.
And what's the prediction we made on Real Science Radio about finding soft tissue material?
That no matter what the date of the layer, the alleged date, they're going to find soft tissue or original biological material when they look for it.
So we're finding it in all the alleged ages of the fossil record.
Yes, and that confirms the prediction because you and I made that prediction before these latest studies where they said, now we got it from 350 million years ago. Now we got it from 500. Now we got it from 1.88 billion years ago. Like, right, guys.
Yeah.
These biological molecules and structures, they survive intact. They don't get permineralized.
Yeah.
They're not rock.
They're fragile. They're very fragile. Once an organism dies, that stuff decays rapidly.
Yes, and it decays because of like 10 different physical factors, including just minor temperature variations, because when these molecules, when they expand and contract ever so slightly for 100 million years, they're going to stay together. For 200, 500 million years, it's a fantasy for adults.
And what's funny
fairy tale.
Is they say this is very rare, right? In one of these papers, very rare. Well, heck, there's just two papers that came out this week.
Well, you know what? Yeah, phys.org. They say that exactly. It's very rare. You know what they mean? Our producer, he said what they mean is they haven't cooked it yet. So it's rare.
Yeah.
Because you and I predicted that while they said it was rare from the very beginning, that they'd find it whenever they go look for it.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening.
I think I'd prefer mine medium. So our producer really likes it rare. But they like it very rare.
I like medium rare.
Okay.
Ribeyes. Just in case anybody in the audience would like to know.
Yep. And this was from the rib, right?
Texas Roadhouse.
No. Yep.
And then the second find that was published just January 2017 in the Journal of Proteome Research. Proteome, big word, it means proteins, right?
Yep.
They got sequence data. In other words, a protein is made up of amino acids that are all linked together in an important sequence and then folded.
That's right.
And so with modern technology, we could see of the 20 different kinds of proteins, what is the order of the proteins that they're linked up? And that's called sequence data. You're not supposed to be able to sequence proteins from dinosaurs because they supposedly went extinct 68 million years ago.
And yet they are. And one of the authors of this paper is none other than Mary Schweitzer.
Mary the Iron Maiden.
Yeah.
Because she published a paper a couple of years ago saying, oh, we know how these are surviving for millions of years. It's because of the iron in the hemoglobin.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it's happening.
Yep.
So we wondered, well, how much hemoglobin is in the feathers of Archaeopteryx? How much hemoglobin is in the shells of dinosaur eggs? How about the chert that's 1.8 billion years old that they say they found original biological?
Where's the hemoglobin?
How much hemoglobin?
Yep.
So anyway.
It's a rescue device. It's not plausible.
No, right. And it wouldn't change the fact that nuclear decay destroys biological molecules and temperature variation will tear, it'll shred them over that much time. But anyway, that's what Mary said. So in this paper, they are sequencing proteins and what they have found. And they said, basically, it's been believed that we would never be able to sequence proteins from dinosaurs because they're so old. They've been fossilized, permineralized. They've been turned to stone. You don't have any biological material anymore, but you do. It's everywhere. And in the Hell Creek Formation in Montana, the bones all smell like they're decomposing.
Exactly. They smell like cadavers in the lab.
Yeah, and that's from Jack Horner, Mary Schweitzer. Yep.
Jack Horner, the guy they patterned that Jurassic Park movie after, right?
That's right, that we've talked to. We offered him like $25,000 or something like that to carbon 14 date their soft tissue T-Rex bone.
And he didn't take us up on it.
He said he talked to Mary. You could see that on our YouTube channel.
Yeah.
You could hear me and Jack Horner talking through that. We sent him a grant offer. But anyway, here's what they said. They said, so you shouldn't be able to get it, but we're getting these protein sequences from dinosaur fossils. What they then want to do, Fred, is they want to look at the sequence to see what dinosaurs evolved from.
Yep.
And you and I have pointed out for years now that if you look at the anatomy, you tell one story of what evolved into what. If you look at the DNA, you tell a very different story. If you look at the RNA, you tell a different story.
Yeah. There's always a different story.
And if you sequence the proteins, you tell yet another story.
Yep. How many stories came out of this one?
Well, the funny thing about this one is how many stories came from the one specimen.
The one specimen.
And only looking at the protein.
Yeah.
So here's what they did. Back in 2009, they published two protein sequences. Not the entire protein, but an important sequence in the protein. Two different sequences. This time, they published eight sequences, and two of them were identical to the sequences that they had
in 2009. Yeah.
Back in, that's awesome. You know what that does? It confirms that their original work was valid.
That's right. Because she spent a lot of time in this paper trying to defend the fact that this isn't due to contamination. So you know that means she's still dealing with these critics in the evolutionist world who just refuse to believe that this is even possible.
So this is not bacteria that somehow seeped into your dinosaur fossil. Originally, we understand that people thought that, and that was fully vetted and excluded with the most brilliant scientific test, very cutting-edge, top-notch technology.
So remember the Discover magazine article that called it a dangerous discovery?
dangerous.
She mentioned a scientist that said that he did not believe the data. It's not true.
He didn't believe this was dinosaur stuff.
He didn't. He just thought it was, like you said earlier, you know, contamination. And she said, well, what would convince you? And he said, nothing.
Nothing.
She asked, what data would convince you? He's like, nothing. His mind's already made up despite the evidence.
So they're doing great science. They're finding real soft tissue from dinosaur bones. So the two sequences they now have resequenced match what they did in 2009. There's six more sequences that are now new information, brand new. And so that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So here's what they did. They said, when you consider the two sequences that we found a few years ago and again now, it looks like you could put this specimen in the Darwinian tree of life among ancient dinosaurs. When you look at those two sequences, when you look at the new sequences and just those six, you could put this dinosaur grouped more closely to crocodiles.
Crocodiles. Okay.
When you combine all eight sequences, you could put this dinosaur more closely to early birds.
Early birds. The early birds.
Bird. The early. So, so it's so funny that you could put it wherever your theory is most comfortable putting it.
Yeah.
And when they present this, they do it with a straight face because they like this stuff, right? They like
that
dinosaurs evolved into birds. Well, here maybe birds evolved into dinosaurs. I don't know.
Yeah.
But the fact is that we have shown on our webpage, rsr.org/genomes, the list of genomes that just don't fit, that you could arrange these trees in the most bizarre ways. Like dolphins next to bats.
That's right. It's all kinds
dolphins
of out-of-place genomes.
Evolved from bats, if you look at their genetic sequence. Too much.
It's all right, Bob.
Okay. So, Fred, now we need to go to your talk. And you were at the Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship. And I just really enjoyed your fake news theme. In fact, we've started using your fake news alerts, your banners, on our website. So thank you for
that. Well, yeah, sure. So, you know, my idea came from the fact that that's what's in the news right now is fake news. Everybody's talking. Both sides are going fake news. You know, we think the fake news is MSNBC, you know, CNN, ABC, NBC. And so I thought, you know what people aren't talking about? There's a ton of fake news coming from things like Science that we just talked about, Science Magazine,
Nature Magazine,
Time Magazine,
Scientific American.
Yeah, Scientific American.
Yeah. All the science publications and the mainstream general news.
And the mainstream. And I put Fox News in with that because they're complicit in pushing all of these silly stories. Like the one a couple weeks ago about Lucy fell out of a tree. That's what happened to her. She got hurt, fell out of a tree. And they post that on the front page.
And that's how she died from falling out of a tree.
Yeah.
Fred, you and I were cracking up about that because they say Lucy was an upright walker, which evolved into human beings, Australopithecus, and here she died. There's good forensic evidence that she fell out of a tree from like 40 feet up. So, and we were saying she's a tree dweller, as you can see from her hands.
So even they, how feet, they, how she
her,
died.
Ear. Yeah.
Exactly. So that's fake news.
It's fake news.
It really is. And it's worse fake news if you ask me. I mean, that's eternal.
Yeah, it is. Right.
It really fools people.
RSR.org/Lucy. You'll get the list of all the evidence against Lucy being an upright walker and on the way to evolving into Homo sapiens.
Yeah. And I pointed out how bad this is. My son's up at CSU, and in his political science class, they gave for recommended news sources. You know, they gave CNN and the New York Times and Al Jazeera. That was recommended reliable news sources. And of course, the ones that weren't, they put, you know, of course, Fox News, things like that. But it's just amazing how they're using this, too, this whole you know, thing of fake news. I think they're going to try to use fake news as a censorship of guys like you and me.
Oh, yeah.
That's the ultimate goal.
Yeah. And we have a webpage on that where constantly we're finding out that the major digital companies are trying to figure out how to censor the news that they think is fake, which means anything exposing how destructive homosexuality is, that's fake. Anything showing how terrible abortion is, that's fake. Anything showing that God created us, that's fake.
Yep.
And only their secular, godless, pagan, filthy worldview will be validated.
Yeah, and you're talking about social media like Facebook and Twitter and things like that.
Yeah, right.
And they've got liberal companies that are going to start working on that.
My
like
Facebook
Snopes.
Page had thousands of friends. Real life, I can't hardly stand them. No, I'm only kidding. So, Fred, what's next on your presentation of the highlights that I thought we should chat about?
So one of them was this Templeton Foundation that provided a lot of money for evolutionists.
Millions of dollars.
Millions of dollars to rethink evolution. That's interesting because there's so much coming out against neo-Darwinism, you know, random mutations and a blind selection process. It's so dumb.
Yeah.
They realize it, and they're like, you got to come up with something different.
They need a new theory. And so the journal Science is where, Fred, I love that you always get information from extremely credible sources. I just love that.
Yeah, and I love the same. You do the same, Bob.
Well, thank you. Yep. When I started this, I very naively thought if you just quoted a scientist on something obvious, that an evolutionist would say, well, that's a pretty good argument.
Yeah.
Forget that.
Yeah.
I mean, what's that saying we have, that little poster on our debates page? That argument against evolution is worth considering. Said no atheist ever.
Yeah, that's right.
So since the early days, I learned that we just have to live in these scientific journals and refer to peer-reviewed papers, not with everything, but when we're really making an argument with an atheist, an unbeliever, an evolutionist. Because while they don't quote those papers, when they make their arguments, they hold us to that standard. And so we often do that, like with
dinosaur
soft tissue.
It takes away some ammunition from them. You know, a lot of times when I'd write articles about creation evolution, I would post it to evolutionists because they're actually really good at vetting your material because they will look through every crease and corner looking for any single.
If you have a typo.
If you misspell. Exactly.
They will mock you relentlessly. But that helps.
It does.
Because,
it actually does.
You know, when you make a mistake, you like people to proof your work.
Yeah.
I have an entire fact-checking team that's worked with Bob and Your Life for 25 years now.
Yep.
I haven't paid any of them. They're all atheists, homosexuals, abortionists, evolutionists.
I never thought of it that way. I thought you really did have some, you know, because we do share emails. And
yeah, we have actually a lot of.
Yeah, and I've proofread some of your
stuff.
A lot
of researchers, a lot of.
But that's funny.
Producers. Yeah, but nobody does as good a job as the homosexuals. The more they
hate
God,
anything they can,
the more they're looking for errors.
Yep.
So, Fred, this article in the journal Science about the Templeton Foundation spending like, what, $8 million or something to fund a rethink of evolution. Here's how they open up the article. They say, for many evolutionary biologists, and think of Richard Dawkins, P.Z. Myers, all these guys, Jerry Coyne, nothing gets them upset quicker than suggesting that evolution might be something other than natural selection and random mutations.
Yeah, because you're threatening their religion.
It enrages them.
Yep.
And so this is not the only example. We have a program, RSR's List of Scholars Doubting Darwin, that we list thousands of scientists, MDs, PhDs, scholars. I mean, literally thousands we have listed by name and affiliation of their university or whatever. But then tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands based on secular research from Harvard and similar institutions who are doubting Darwin.
My brother's favorite show. It was one of the first times he listened to Real Science Radio. But one of the things that I had in the presentation was, and this was fake news, they claim that 98% of scientists believe that man evolved.
Compared with 65% of the public. So 98%, that's a pretty high.
That's a pretty high number. And this came from Pew Research. So that's a popular, well-known polling center that did this study.
Well, who did they survey?
Yeah, so I looked at, okay, where does this survey come from, this 98%?
Yeah.
Well, it comes from AAAS, which is
the American Association for the Advancement of Science.
Exactly.
Aren't they a pro-evolution group?
They're the group that publishes Science Magazine. It's like Creation Research Society does the CRS Quarterly.
Right.
They do Science Magazine.
Which
that is the evolutionist.
Evolutionary motherlode.
It is.
So it'd be like if they surveyed the members of Creation Research Society and said, do you believe in creation? And they said, 99.8% of scientists believe in creation. So they surveyed a pro-evolution group and they said, well, scientists are overwhelmingly pro-evolution, that would be like surveying Planned Parenthood and asking, what percentage of healthcare providers are pro-choice? Yeah.
That's a great analogy.
I mean, come on, the real...
I wish I'd have talked to you before my talk, because that's I came up with an analogy during my talk. It was lame compared to that
one. Fred, they buried the headline here. The real headline would be this. Thousands of AAAS members reject evolution. Yeah. That's the headline.
Because even if it is really 98%, that means 2% reject it.
Right.
And that's an evolutionist group.
So come on, thousands of their members reject evolution. That's the headline.
Okay, Bob, so the next one is when we were in Washington, D.C. a couple of years ago, we went to the Smithsonian Institute.
Yeah.
And my wife is...
Love that place.
Oh, yeah. It's very interesting. Well, they've got the human origin section.
Ton of fake news, but I do love the place.
Huge fake news walking through that section.
Yeah.
And, of course, my wife's grabbing me because she knows I'm going to be saying a lot. You know, she's going to let me go in there. It was like, try to contain yourself.
Don't start a scene.
Yeah. I didn't start really a scene,
Fred.
But I wasn't quiet either, okay? Right. Well, one of the things they have is this myth about human-chimp DNA similarity being 98%. And I knew that that was fake news.
They still say like 98.5, 99%. You hear all those figures.
That's right. Well, anyways, a guy named Jeffrey Tompkins, he's a scientist. He was the director at Clemson University of their genomic studies.
I love Tom. He's just awesome.
He's really good. He's a molecular scientist. Well, he actually tapped into the database where you can look at the human genome. And it's complete.
The stuff's all online available.
Yeah, it's online available. And the chimp genome is available too, but it's a rough draft.
Yeah.
Well, what's interesting, probably the biggest thing is the chimp genome is 10% larger.
Than the human genome.
It's 10% larger than the human genome.
So how could they be 98.5% the same?
Yeah, that's absurd.
On our genome page that I mentioned, RSR's list of genomes that just don't fit, years ago... Lower down on the page, we left a question for the student, and it was this. How long is the human genome? Because all these articles, scientific papers, where on any other species where they're talking about the genome is sequenced, they would tell you how long the genome is, how many genetic letters, how many nucleotides are in there.
Mm-hmm.
100 papers on the chimp genome, nobody said how long it was. I spent hours looking for the length of the chimp genome, and I wondered, are they not publishing this?
Mm-hmm.
Because it immediately tells everyone that we're not 98.5% similar.
That's right. And so now we know that it's 10% bigger.
That's awesome.
Indisputable.
That's awesome.
So that would be like, you know, having a user manual, and then you get a new copy, and it has an appendix of 10% more data. Are you going to say that these manuals are the same?
They're the same.
You're going to want the improved, the new manual, or else you're not going to have all the instructions.
I don't read user manuals.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just don't. I can't.
They can be a pain. I hate putting stuff together. I like it when I get by something that's already put together, but that's another story.
Okay.
But anyways.
So we're not 98% the same just by the nature of the length of the genomes.
That's right. So when he actually did the comparison, he found that at most, there would be an 88% similarity. And he's actually being super conservative because what that is 88% similarity between one particular chromosome. He looked at all the chromosomes, and the closest, the most similar was 88%.
Of any two where they're related.
Yeah.
The highest level of similarity was 88%.
88%.
It went down from there, like the chimp Y chromosome.
Exactly.
Is what? Over 30%. Different, where it cannot be aligned.
Yeah, that's the most different.
I told that to a scientist yesterday. He's got a PhD in biochemistry from Stanford. Just a brilliant guy. We went to lunch, and he was stunned to hear about the Y chromosome. And I could show him. Here it is in all these peer-reviewed papers.
Yeah, and the Y chromosome, it's really conserved. And what that means is it just doesn't change. It's very robust. It's
because you inherit it from your father.
Yeah, and it's just robust.
From the male.
There's not a lot of mutational change in
it.
So what a perfect way to look to see if there's a relationship, an ancestor between chimps and humans.
Right.
Well, guess what? The thing was 30% different.
We're so different.
And one scientist who reported on this discovery, an evolutionist, he said it was horrendous. Is that a scientific word, Bob?
Horrendous? Horrendous difference.
It's a religious word.
Human and chimps, right.
Yep.
This is Dr. David Page of the Whitehead Institute for Biomedical Research in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And Fred, what I love is he talked about the difference in the Y chromosome, right? Which they call that the male specific Y, the MSY. Yep. And because you're male if you have the Y chromosome.
Yep.
Now, I need to remind them that that's hate speech. That's gender
right.
specific. We need to purge toxic masculinity from our science journals. So how do they know that this chromosome identifies as a male?
That's right.
But anyway, oh, and by the way, remember the Boy Scouts as of like a week ago?
Yeah.
They now
That's
said,
horrible.
As we predicted, first they said we're going to accept homosexual scouts, and then we predicted they would accept homosexual scoutmasters.
Mm-hmm.
They did that like a year and a half later. Now we will accept girls as Boy Scouts if the girls self-identify as boys. And a lot of girls like the camping trips that the Boy Scouts go to because they're so astounding.
Yeah.
To Boundary Waters and Catalina Island down in the Florida Keys. And a lot of girls have always wanted to do this. Now, if they say they're a boy, the Boy Scouts have said we'll accept them as members.
That's right. And just a few days ago, confirmed to the Senate with Secretary of State Rex Tillerson.
Yeah.
What does he have to do with the Boy Scouts?
Well, he was on their executive board, the national board, and he pushed homosexuality through the Boy Scouts. I mean, their pledge, they still say that we will hold ourselves to be morally straight.
Yep.
And the Boy Scouts of all groups are being used to promote.
And they caved
perversion.
In, and he was a part of that caving in. I remember I'd get things in the mail about support the Boy Scouts because there's this attack on them by the homosexual community.
Right,
you know,
and it turns out the attack on them is from Rex Tillerson. And Jerry Falwell Jr., who runs the largest Christian university in the country, said his views on abortion, homosexuality, they're irrelevant because he's defending him as a selection.
Yeah.
Well, the Secretary of State represents the United States to the world, including on all the social issues
exactly.
that the United Nations yep. gets involved with. It's just so tragic.
It is.
And which of these guys believe that God created us versus that we've evolved from apes
mm-hmm.
or from fish or from worms?
Yep.
So we're in a mess. But at any rate, thank you for bringing the whole 98% scam to your talk at RMCF.
Well, they have a fixation with 98%, maybe because they think it's like if you say 99%, they're being too, you know, hyperbolic
yeah,
or whatever.
Right.
Cause like 98% of scientists believe in climate change. And, you know, of course, that's a total myth, a total
right.
fake news.
Yeah.
Yet
right.
everybody reports on it.
Yeah. RSR.org/warming.
Warming. Okay.
Yeah. What a fun collection of all
yep.
the evidence against global warming. So, Fred, you also presented from a leading atheist website, Rational Wiki. That they said because DNA decays rapidly in less than 100,000 years, for example, therefore a prediction of atheism is that we will never find DNA in dinosaur bones.
That's right.
That's one of their predictions.
That is, and it's still on Rational Wiki. I love referencing that page because I've been doing this, I think, that page I've been showing in presentations for the last at least 5 years.
Yeah.
So I always go to that page. I got a handy link. And so when I give my presentation, it's as of today, they still have this prediction that if you find DNA in a bone, in soft tissue,
it can't be more than 100,000 years old.
That's right.
And lo and behold,
we find DNA. They found DNA, the journal Bone, which is a secular journal.
Yeah, peer-reviewed, scientific
reported
journal.
On the finding of DNA in dinosaur soft tissue.
They got it from a hadrosaur and from a T-Rex. Not the entire genome sequenced, but enough so that multiple tests for the double helix resulted in positive results.
Yeah. So if this Rational Wiki, if these authors, if we tell this to them that we have passed their test, will they become creationists?
Probably not.
Probably not. Because their minds are already made up. But it's funny, that prediction is still there.
Yeah.
It's been there for at least 5 years.
Yeah.
And I'll just keep using it. I don't really want to tell them because I like using it in my presentation.
Well, it is funny. And we have a page on soft tissue deniers. We call them STDs. RSR.org/STDs, where we list all these famous scientists who are soft tissue deniers, even though the peer-reviewed journals are filled with evidence. And they know it's impossible that transparent, flexible blood vessels could survive for 68 million years.
Yep.
They know it's impossible intuitively. And so they say, it's not true. No, it's not true. It's not true. They never found it. They never found it.
Yep.
Well, they did find it because they're young and they're in the ballpark of the age of Egyptian mummies, because Egyptian mummies have a similar amount of decomposition. They have traces of these original biological materials.
You need to have some programmer write a piece where, in your section of that article, it says, as of this day, because you have in the page, yes, on the Rational Wiki, as of March 15th,
yeah,
2015, but that's the last time you visited your page or updated,
yeah,
that section.
Right,
you ought to,
right,
just have it automatically show, yeah, today's current date.
Check the page and update our, yep, site. Oh, I like that. See that? We need some programmers.
There you go.
We have awesome web programmers, but we need a few more.
That's right.
Okay, so Fred, we're about out of time, but real quickly, Tiktaalik, they said that it was the transition to quadrupeds. They finally had an example of a fossil that they say was the first to walk on four legs. And lo and behold, they found a trackway of a sequence of, you know, a four-footed, yep, creature walking in stone from 10 million years before Tiktaalik, based, yeah, on their timeline.
Yeah. Something it's supposed to evolve into is older than what it is.
Is older than Tiktaalik.
So that totally threw that one out of the, you know, yeah, that one's toast. But of course, Bill Nye, the science guy, that was one of his favorite things to talk about in the debate with Ken Ham. Yet it's been refuted. That's fake news. It was reported. The article I presented in my presentation was from the New York Times. And it was funny because the article said, the missing link is found. So they're admitting that they are all missing.
Every time
they find a missing link, they say they
found it.
Yeah.
And then
we found the missing link.
Well, there are no missing links.
Yeah.
And every time they find it, they say they found it.
Yep.
So, Fred, the last thing, we are out of time, but I love your quote. You played a video from the discoverer of one of the famous whale fossils. This guy discovered Rhodocetus. And Rhodocetus is considered to be, wow, I mean, big time. Dr. Philip Gingrich, this is one of the important transitional phases to whales from land-dwelling mammals.
Mm-hmm.
And the quote you played is hysterical. And so we're putting on our website, rsr.org, and in the museums around the world, and this has been documented by Dr. Carl Werner, still, they show Rhodocetus with a fluked tail,
mm-hmm,
and flippers in a blowhole. So Dr. Werner interviews Philip Gingrich. So you see it on film. You played it. And he says, so tell us about the tail. And he says, well, we never really found the tail. And tell us about the flippers. Well, we never really found flippers. You know, tell us about the blowhole. Well, we didn't have that part of the skull, but we thought it would have a fluke tail and flippers and a blowhole. But then we found more pieces of the skeleton and more skeletons. And we now know that it didn't have a fluke tail and it didn't have flippers. It walked on all fours. It didn't have a blowhole. I mean, come on. It was all made up.
It was all made up. And yet college textbook refers to this series as increasingly well documented, the whale series.
Increasingly well.
Yeah.
And so we have our RSR list of whale evolution problems, which is maybe one of the best lists we've ever done with Dr. Carl Werner. It is stunning. You could read them as bullets.
Yep.
One after another. And these two guys, this professor and his student, are the two who found all the species that evolved into whales.
Yeah. Two guys.
We want to make a YouTube video about 1 minute long of Dr. Phil Gingrich. And he's walking down the street and some gal is walking by with her pet on a leash and the dog nips a little at him. He says, get that whale out of here. And somebody comes into his office and he's like, what is that whale doing here? To him, everything is a whale.
Yeah.
If you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail. Everything he found, he immediately declared it was a whale. And in a century, nobody found these whale intermediaries except for him and his student, Hans Thuesen. They found them all.
They found them all.
It's too much.
That would be a hilarious YouTube video.
Wouldn't that be great?
The way you can produce things now, you just kind of crop his head on.
Yeah.
His head on somebody.
Oh, you know,
that would be really,
Fred,
funny.
We have so many ideas, so many videos we want to produce. So little time and such a small bank account.
Yeah, we
really do. We need revenue.
We do. And this month is our telethon month.
Yeah, $30,000, an absolutely vital goal. It's not like, oh, that'll give us a cushion. We need that revenue to continue broadcasting. We air on America's number one most powerful Christian radio station, Denver's AM 670 KLTT, 50,000 watts. We've been on there for 25 years, and our website, rsr.org, and for the rest of the week, kgov.com. But it costs a lot of money. We're in our studios here, nestled between Denver and the foothills of the Rocky Mountains. And it's all expensive to do all this. And we really need your help, the listener. If you appreciate what we're doing, we can't do it without your help. So maybe you want to get these videos from Dr. Werner. We sell them on our store. Go to rsr.org, click on the store, and browse the science department.
Lots of good stuff.
You could get a subscription or make a donation or just purchase materials, and that will help too, all toward our telethon.
Yep.
All right. So, hey, thank you, Fred.
Thanks, Bob.
This has been a really fun show. So for Fred Williams
and Bob Inyart,
this is Real Science Radio. May God bless you. Intelligent design and deep.